Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is LifeLinks with the DL Link. LifeLinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Well, welcome to the show, the DL Link show on 101.9 Chai FM. This is the show where we connect you through insights, information, and illumination. So wonderful to be with you on this rather beautiful Thursday. You know, here in Joburg, it is a sublime day. And being the 9th of October, Sukkot, Yom Kippur just behind us, and then waking up to the news that please God, that the hostages will be freed soon is, I mean, it is indeed the gift that we've all been waiting for. So we wait and we see and we pray and we continue to hope. But I certainly am buoyed and so excited and feeling pretty overwhelmed. And so I think that's why our first guest is going to be pretty unique. You know, we've had him on the show before and he shared so many amazing insights with us when he was on the show last, sharing the story of how he lost his wife to a brain tumor within really a short period of time, and how he and his children very consciously took on a very present, conscious way of handling it, being in the moment. And it was really great to have Stefan on the show all those years ago. And so I'm so excited to have him back on the show, and especially 6 years later, you know, seeing how he is, what life looks like, whether he's still present, and also, you know, talking about what it's like to be, how one would navigate being present when one is kind of, held hostage. I'm so interested to pick Stefan's brain about that and what presence would look like there. So, as I said, so excited to have him on the show. Stefan Brosen, welcome. It's great to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Nick. Great to be here. Nice to hear your voice. And happy birthday, am I right? It's your birthday today.
It is.
So it is a very, very special day. Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah. So big happy birthday. Yeah, lovely.
Oh, that's so kind of you. Thank you, Stefan.
Great to be here. Yeah.
It's so great to be here. And, you know, reading your book, and I revisited your book, You Are Here, A Story of Presence. And I remember we spoke about the book. It was in 2019.
Yes.
Stefan, I think it was right at the last few interviews we did in the studio. You know, then COVID hit, then the world turned upside down, everything's happened. And then revisiting the book, I'm reminded how the insights, the story, but the way you and your children navigated, you know, this journey, you know, using thought and presence, like that hasn't changed. And if anything, we need it now more than ever before. So that's why I'm really excited to have you on the show. But I think it's really important to give our listeners just a bit of context. If you don't mind, can go back to the story of Jody, your wife, I think of 35 years.
Yeah, we were together for 35 years.
Long time. And just before Rosh Hashanah being diagnosed with the brain tumor.
Absolutely. Look, I think my whole journey really started with the loss of my father at the age of 7, also to a brain tumor. That was my first sort of real taste of, sort of disaster, tragedy, cancer, and dealing with that as a little boy, a little child, in a space where there weren't really words, there weren't really therapists, or it wasn't popular at that time, and then carrying that anxiety of everything being a potential tumor, everything being sort of scary, frightening, and then going through life not realizing that I was in my head all the time, and being a little me, fearful of everything and that anything could possibly come and get you. And then at a later stage, literally say 42 years later, sort of having worked on myself to try and get rid of all of those fears and anxieties, then suddenly to be hit with another brain tumor, but this time with my wife, and then realizing that, well, my biggest fears have actually come to life, and I actually need to deal with it. But now I can actually deal with it in a much more present, adult-like me space, as opposed to the little me. And I think we've all got that little me space inside of us. You know, we all have adversity. We all have difficulties that go on in our childhood, and they affect us and they shape our lives, and we carry that anxiety. And I still carry that little me wherever I go. But the fortunate thing was, you know, through work of going into therapy, studying a lot of mindfulness, you know, practicing mindfulness and developing certain techniques, one's was, you know, a lot stronger and a lot wiser in handling the adversity of the loss of my wife second time round. So, yeah, so I think those were the, you know, that's really to put things into context. And I think it's a lot of whether there's the little me operating, which was the little me having lost my father, versus the adult me that, you know, lost my wife, that obviously, you know, it had enormous challenges and a lot of, you know, fear, but one was in a very different space and with a lot more sort of techniques and tools to handle it. And anybody, I think everybody has the little me and the big me inside of them. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I want to expand a little bit on the little me and big me, Stefan. I mean, your kids all write, you know, a short little excerpt in the book, their experience, their maturity, their insight. They all use the little me and the big me. So, you know, and it speaks to you spending time, Jody, spending time working through this, as I said, bringing such a consciousness to that journey. It was pretty amazing to witness, to read that, Stefan. So maybe for the audience, you can just expand. I mean, you've mentioned it, but a little bit more. What is that? Because but the little me, and the reason I'm bringing up your kids is you're talking about the little me when you were 7 years old, but you're talking about, you know, your kids are talking about a little me. So let's expand on what is the little me and the big me?
Yeah, I think, you know, the little me is the little side of us. It's the fear, the anxiety. It's almost, you know, I sometimes like to feel it as one egoic space, you know, that's never very, you know, never happy, is always fearful, always wants more, you know, whether it be through jealousy or insecurity or anxiety. It's an element of the mind that is very fearful and frightened, and that's the little me. That was the little me that sort of operated as a child, and we've all got it, you know, we all have our insecurities. We all in our head a lot of the time. I think most of the time, I believe, you know, we have like 60,000 thoughts a day. And the vast majority of those thoughts, I think 95% are the same thoughts that you had yesterday and the day before. And that's the little me. It's the fearful, frightened sort of space, the insecure space that actually takes you out of the actual beauty of this actual moment that you stand in or sit in or wherever you are. And one has to develop the adult me, because it's a consciousness, we all have it, it's all inside, but often it gets trapped or distracted by the egoic mind or the little me that wants you to either be in the past or wants you to be in the future. So it takes work, and it's something that I've tried to teach my children to just do the best they can, and you know, the rest is in God's hands and there's nothing else you can do. You can't be too obsessed with the future. You can't be too obsessed with the past. You have to grab the moment that sits in front of you, and that takes certain type of, you know, skills and tools, but it's that focus that is the difference of living, I think, a much more sort of fulfilled life, a much more joyous life, and something that actually benefits the people around you as well. Because when you are in the little me space, you never really actually hear. It's all about what's going on in your head, not what's actually going on in front of you, around you, and it lacks the value that the big me actually brings.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of people who are listening right now, Stephen, who perhaps have been given a pretty scary diagnosis, who are listening to your story and they're relating to your story. And how tough it must be to move from that little me to the big me, right? It's because it's the why me. Why is it happening? Sure. What have I done wrong? And certainly in your case, you know, with the second time round, your father, a brain tumor and another brain tumor. And maybe we can just unpack that a little bit, because you know, what is obvious in the book as well, Stephen, is that you talk about taking moments to scream, to shout, to be angry, you know, at the creator, God or whatever. And then, so it's almost like processing it. So it's not a suppressing. And I think that this is really important. You're not telling people that your emotions, you know, are not worthy to be heard and to be processed. Can we just speak to that?
No, absolutely. I think, you know, when I feel sad, literally when Jodie got diagnosed and when she passed away, I can tell you every single day for a year, I cried every single day. And I would be driving and all of a sudden I would feel these emotions sort of leak. You know, we'd been together for 35 years and, you know, at every street in Joburg, like I sort of had been with her on. And wherever, I just suddenly, all of a sudden, wherever I was, I suddenly feel, you know, would feel these emotions come into play. And, but what I would do, I would embrace those emotions, you know, I would sort of stop and I would just feel it and I would let myself cry. And if I was extremely angry, I would shout in the car and scream at God and I would let it all out. So it's definitely not that you reach a space that you just don't have these emotions. In fact, you welcome these emotions. You embrace these emotions. You actually treat it. It's you know, it's almost you nurture them. You give them the sort of attention that they need and you let them out. But you're the observer of the emotions as opposed to letting the emotions sort of, you know, sort of overtake your entire being. So that's, you know, I remember, you know, sometimes even when I, you know, I'd go to gym and be extremely angry, and even, you know, today there are days where I'm angry or upset or, you know, issues with life, kids, and I'd actually go into the gym and just, you know, hold those weights or pick up those weights, but actually use the anger to actually pick up the weight, you know, to sort of really give it a go. And so you've got to feel the emotions. I'm a big believer of that. You've got to embrace them and do that. By no means do they disappear. In fact, you welcome them. That's the actual, I believe, secret.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, and you also write about how you used to run, and that was so important for you, going those 45-minute runs. So when those thoughts come up, Stephen, because I want the audience to get a lot of value out of this and your experience. Yeah. And what I love is that you've kept it very simple, because it is simple. Mm. We complicate things, right? And I know that one of your kids spoke about, and I just love, I mean, how you hand over the book, The Untethered Soul. I mean, it is the most phenomenal book, Michael Singer. Yes. And he talks about this this noisy roommate roommate, and that's that little me that you're speaking to, you know, that voice that in our heads all the time. So maybe you can just break down how that would work. So what are you saying? Would you then release the emotion, and then from that kind of observer point of view, realize that that's the emotion, not get lost in the thoughts attached to it, and bring yourself to presence? Is that how you do that?
I think, what I would do is, you know, all of, you know, for example, if you sort of go into, you're sitting with somebody who just triggers all your stuff or does everything, and you suddenly go into a whole sort of a mind chatter and, you know, this is a disaster, this person's, you know, makes me angry, and you're all in your head. I try to catch myself before I'm totally overwhelmed with it. And how I try to catch myself is try to use my senses to bring myself back into the moment. So I would say, listen, I can really feel now that I'm losing control, that I'm going to be extremely angry. I've got all these thoughts in my head. I need to turn the volume up. So how do I turn the volume up? The volume means I need to be more present. And how am I going to be more present? You use your senses. You know, God gave you these five, you know, amazing senses. So suddenly I would just take a breath, just slow down, just take a breath, feel myself sitting in the chair where I am now. Okay, not getting into my, I can see my thoughts running, racing, they want to take over me. Let me just see, look where what I can see. I can see all different colors in this room. I can see the space in this room. What can I hear? I can hear, different sounds. And I would use these senses just to try still the mind a little bit, because once one's overtaken by the mind, you're almost lost. You've gone down that path. So I turn up the volume with sort of these tools to try bring myself back into presence. And then I can actually catch myself and see all these thoughts happening in my head, and I realize they're just thoughts. It's like that, the child that's trying to take over the boardroom. He's operating, and he wants to dictate the meeting. And I don't judge them, and I realize it's that little me that's operating and wants to take over the meeting, and that's fine. And I almost like laugh at it, and that's what he's trying to do. But the adult me needs to take over now, and that's bringing myself back to where I am now. Seeing where I am, feeling where I'm sitting, looking at the different colors and shapes. And then I'm able to be a lot more present, a lot more conscious. And I feel that anxiety. It sits with me, and I can often, and I do suffer from a lot of anxiety, and I can feel it inside of me, but I'm the observer of the anxiety. I'm not the anxiety. And I feel it, it's in my chest or my stomach. And I just welcome it. I just observe it, and I just let it be. And I find, over time, the intensity and the frequency of that anxiety drops. So it's not like it ever goes away. It's just that maybe I'm able to manage it a little bit more. It's maybe not as intense, but there are times that are very intense. And maybe it doesn't, it's not as frequent. But you have to try catch yourself before you go into all the thoughts in your head, because then you're lost. And that's where I keep saying to you, turn up the volume, turn up the dimmer switch, turn up the light, be more present and use tools to actually get you into the moment, because otherwise you've almost stepped over the cliff and it's free fall. So the trick is to try to get yourself, into a position of conscious awareness before it actually happens.
Yeah. And I think that what you said is really important, is that it's not that it doesn't happen, because we're human. And this is what it is to be human, to have these experiences. It's how we manage them when they come up. And so I love that you've said, try and catch it before. And I just want to repeat it. And be the observer. And that you've said, non-judgmentally, it's almost like you have a smile on your face because you know that's the little you. Mm-hmm. And using your senses to come back and realizing that you are not the anxiety, that they're feelings of anxiety, it's there, and that everything passes. It comes and that it and then it goes. And so, Stephan, for people who are listening, because these are really, really simple, so simple, valuable tools. When you're not doing anything wrong when they happen. It's just part of it, and you deal with it in the same way. So how did you how with that diagnosis, and when Jody went into for surgery, and you went into the gardens of the hospital, and you huddled in with your kids, your four kids, and you had a conversation about being very conscious about deciding how to move forward with this. How did you do that? How did you bring such presence and such maturity? I think the instinct is often to protect the children and not tell them anything, but you didn't. You brought them in from day one.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the big difference was, is as a child, having lost my dad to a brain tumor, and in those days it was like that. No one even really discussed it. It was sort of, I remember my mother calling me in. I mean, obviously I knew my dad wasn't well, and 3 years before, they actually tried to cut the tumor out, and he was sort of paralyzed for 3 years. But there was no therapy. There wasn't any discussions. And I remember my mother just calling me and saying, listen, kiss your dad, goodbye. And then it was sort of like move on.
Sure.
And I think that, and I didn't want that to happen. I wanted to be open about the whole experience. I wanted to not let suppress those thoughts. I wanted to be, you know, embrace what was going on, because I realized how, not dangerous, but just how it had messed me up, having, you know, all those issues that I couldn't really deal with, and not being able to sort of understand what was going on. So that was the fortunate thing. And I had also experienced how I, as an individual who, being present, what a difference it made to my life. Because for such a long period, I wasn't present. I was always in my thoughts, and I lost a lot of life because of that. I lost a lot of good moments, because great moments were presenting themselves, and I was somewhere else. And whether it was, you know, my kids being born or stuff like this, and other issues going on, and I was distracted, and I wasn't embracing it, and I realized that I've got to actually really rouse myself up here and make a difference and teach my kids. It wasn't always easy, you know. There are plenty of times I slipped back and was fearful and shouted and screamed and cried. And that's, you know, but there was a step in that direction. It doesn't matter how small it is, but it was the conscious step that this is my intention, to actually try be more present. Even if it's just walking down the passage, you know, while, you know, the operation is taking place, and saying to myself, I'm not going to think of anything. I'm just going to take a step forward and just see this passage walking down, you know, the hospital sort of passage. That's it. Just give myself 3 or 4 seconds of just no thoughts. Just, you know, one little step. That's all it takes. You know, and that, you know, laid the pathway to sort of a much bigger, sort of healthier approach.
Yeah. It's so profound. It really is profound. And also, it says a lot about how resilient and strong children are as well, you know, when you handed it over to them, and how they, what they, you know, as I said, reading their beautiful insights, it was, we've got to give kids a lot more credit. Stephen, just very quickly, I started off and we're talking about, you know, these hostages 2 years down the line, and I've so often thought about, if I was there, like, would I be practicing mindfulness? Would I be practicing wanting to be present in the moment? And I'm sure you know, you can agree with me. I mean, I suppose what saves you in moments like that is to use your beautiful, wild imagination and go back to memory. So isn't that, I think, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Wouldn't it be, isn't that an interesting study that here we are, in order to cope with the moment, we bring ourselves to present so we don't get lost in thought. But I suppose being there, you would still have to manage your thought, but imagination and remembering and visualization would be a saving grace.
Sure, if you can do that. Okay. I mean, if you can think about it in a positive way, absolutely. I mean, if you can do that. Unfortunately, the mind doesn't do that. You know, a large portion of the time it takes you to the most fearful place. And that's the problem. You know, we don't really have control of that mind. So the ideal is to go beyond that, because, you know, as I say, you know, you have 60,000 thoughts a day, and the vast majority of them are, a lot of them are negative thoughts, and are the same thoughts you had yesterday.
You've got to manage those.
So you've got to try sort of realize you're more than your thoughts. You have the reserve of those thoughts, but it's by no means easy.
Yeah. So 6 years after writing the book, how is your mindfulness practice? So let's not even call it a mindfulness practice. Let's call it the way you live your life, being present. Yeah. How is that?
Yeah, it's been actually great. You know, it's quite amazing to see that there is life after two tumors. You know, there really is. Yeah. And I love my life. And then on some level, I may even be happier now than I've ever been, sort of, you know, like in my entire life. Because I think as you get older, you do get wise, and you do learn to manage your stuff. And I had a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I say, through these techniques and through working on myself, and I'm not in my head as much. I'm still a large part of the day in my head, but I am able to get out of it a lot more, and then I have a lot more peace. And so my life is good, you know. I've got a girlfriend now. My kids are doing great. Most of them have finished university. They've got partners, most of them. I have great relationships. Works work well, and I think just my own inner sense of self is better. I'm more present as an individual, having gone through the adversity and difficulties, and I've continued to work on myself. I do believe that's what life is all about, is to sort of enhance your sense of consciousness, enhance your sense of presence. And I think with the work, and it takes a long, long period of time, and it's a lifetime journey. It doesn't happen overnight, and that people can't. People think it's a light switch. You just suddenly you can turn it on. It's not. You're all about it. It's a lifetime of work. But I think if you do the work, and every day you put a little bit of effort into it, slowly, slowly you conquer more territory. And that is the beauty. But you can't give
Stephen.
Up. Yeah.
No, and as you say, it's part of life. And to have you on the show 6 years later and hear these words come out of your mouth, what a joy. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. I really want to encourage people to read your book, You're Here. It's short. You'll read it in an hour. Mm. But it's profound. It's so, so beautiful. And there were things I was going to read, but we've run out of time. Stephen, people, I suppose, can contact you directly if they want a copy.
Sure. It's on Amazon as well, if you want it on Amazon. But otherwise, you can contact me directly. Sure.
You Are Here, A Story of Presence. Stephen Brosen is told to by Trevor Waller. Stephen, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, awesome. Nick. Have
so
a wonderful day.
Take
Enjoy
care.
Your birthday.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
go well.
Thanks, you too.
Oh, wow. The power of presence, managing the mind. It's just such a beautiful, beautiful journey. We're going to take a break and then we're going to be talking about October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Stay with us.